This is the Women's Protection and Empowerment Podcast, where we give space to talking about women and girls in humanitarian settings. At International Rescue Committee, we deliver innovative programs focused on preventing and responding to violence against women and girls. We are in pursuit of a world where women and girls live free from violence as valued and respected members of their community. This movement is about equitable access to opportunities.
Empowering women and girls means a lot for development of the next generation, and it's important for the development of a country.
It's about catalysts for change.
Women and girls are not just the faces of poverty. They're also the key to overcoming.
It's about voice and respect.
The path to victory is still long, and I'm not ready to give up. This has become to me more than a work, but a passion to see women and the girls are gaining what has been for long denied to them.
From IRC, this is the WPE Podcast. I'm Christy Crabtree.
Monitoring and evaluation is a core function of humanitarian work because we need to know if we're doing the right thing, if we're on the right track, and if not, to be able to pinpoint the areas where we can improve. Yet, we often get stuck in a cycle of thinking about monitoring and evaluation in terms of donor reports, because it's easy to follow compliance requirements from donors. Check, done. But beyond this compliance aspect of our work, there is monitoring for quality, and there should be a real desire to learn about and from our programs to keep advancing this work. So today, we're going to talk more about that. How do we move beyond reporting to invest in monitoring for continuous quality improvement? I'm really excited to have two guests with us today, coming from two different perspectives, one that's overlooking a lot of programs or programs that cross multiple countries, and one that really has the in-depth perspective inside one country looking at programming. So I'll pass it over to you two. Please introduce yourselves.
Hi, Christy. I'm Betsy Laird. I'm the Senior Monitoring, Evaluation, and Learning Advisor. It's a bit of a mouthful for the Violence Prevention and Response Unit. So I oversee, as you said, monitoring, evaluation, learning across countries and across protection portfolios.
Hello, I'm Ban. I'm the Women's Protection and Empowerment Coordinator for the Lebanon Country Program. So I moved from M&E to program. It was easier for me just because M&E was decentralized. So the M&E person was under each sector and not under a separate media unit. That's how I was able to get into the details of all the programmatic aspects and activities and was able to smoothly transfer to program. Thank you. And thank you for having me.
Thanks both. Let's get in with some basics of this. Can you give me your most simple, basic definition of monitoring? Let's start there.
So for me, monitoring is not only to follow up on the progress of the indicators in terms of targets and reach. So I can say that monitoring has two aspects. It should be checking and making sure that we're maintaining a good quality of implementation. And it also should inform us if we're on track in terms of reach, because no one can deny the importance of indicators and targets, but they're not the only important aspect. So monitoring is essential for the entire implementation. And of course, every activity should have its own monitoring tools. So monitoring is not only a progress towards target or just some quantitative data. It's also making sure that the quality is maintained and that the activities are well implemented and responding to the needs of the beneficiaries. And of course, taking into consideration the beneficiaries' feedback and recommendation. So I think that every single team member should have monitoring responsibilities, and this should not be only restricted to M&E staff.
I love that, Vaughn. That was really comprehensive and holistic. I think from a basic perspective, it's really the systematic review of your program. So monitoring and evaluation, but specifically monitoring, should be something that's a part of your design. And as Bond said, it's something that everyone should take part in, because if it's not integrated into your program, it won't be particularly useful. So that systematic and thoughtful review of your program as it's being implemented in order to track progress and assess quality.
I love especially the point about this being beyond just people that are tagged with M&E in their title. I'd like to come back to that in a bit. But I want to talk first about why you think we get stuck on the donor reporting aspect of M&E.
I think that because we get to focus on the indicators and the targets to make sure that we're reaching this specific target that we're accountable for based on the funding and the budget that was set, because that's how the donors measure the progress of the project. And basically, they decide if they want to fund us again or not. So it's one key component that the donor look at. And again, this is, yes, essential and very important, but these information should be further analyzed and should be used to inform the program on the changes or amendments that should be done. And also to check if the implementation is actually responding to these needs of the beneficiaries and what should be maybe repeated or what should be just removed or what was successful and can be considered as a best practice. But I think that we get stuck on this just because of the entire process of how the donor funds us and how the indicators are also related to the budget. So to make sure that we're on track and we're accountable for these targets and indicators.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think, unfortunately, this happens across sectors. What starts in good faith from a donor perspective of trying to help you monitor your program for quality so that they have an insight into how the program's going ends up being this onerous yoke that the teams are tied to, that they feel pressure to reach these targets and get that perfect percentage on the client satisfaction tool. And so it can become secondary to look at that data from a what can I do with it perspective. Because by the time you collected it, analyzed it, and gotten it to the donor, people are tired and they have a lot of work. And it's not typically a part of people's systematic, programmatic engagement to look at that data from a, okay, and what's next perspective. And so I think that it's partially the time issue and partially exactly what Bon said, that it's our compliance. It's how we make sure that we get back to the donors and they can assess our programs and make sure that they give us another tranche of funding. But it does take away from the learning component of monitoring a little bit.
Yeah, it makes it a little bit more of a accountability checklist than a real opportunity to learn and plug that back into programs. I'm wondering what you all see as some of the biggest misconceptions or myths about monitoring.
That it's only for reporting, it's only for meal staff, and we're not interested in knowing more about what meal staff do. We barely look at the numbers just to check if we're on track or not. Also, that some people say that it's only quantitative, but actually it's not.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say that, you know, I think there's this real misconception around monitoring data needing to be quantitative because indicators themselves are quantitative. If they're user perception, meaning client satisfaction or feedback from clients, it's still a quantitative data point because you're usually ranking something and then creating a percentage or a score out of that. But there's a lot of qualitative information that program officers, managers, service delivery focal points get from the clients regularly and systematically that rarely goes analyzed because it's not part of those indicators. But we should be analyzing that because it's really important feedback that we could be improving our programs with.
Indicator focused, siloed with M&E staff, not involving everyone. If those are some of the misconceptions about monitoring, Let's look at the opposite. If the goal of this is really to pull learning from programs that we can then plug back into the program or to the broader response or to look at gaps that need to be addressed, what should we be focusing on when we monitor the quality of programs?
Christy, I think that this is very essential. That's what we were talking about. So we have to learn from the entire implementation and to analyze all the information that we got from M&E. actually no implementation is perfect. Monitoring can give us a lot of information that we should use again. It's like recycling the information that we have. We can put it back into some maybe new proposals to identify some gaps, because we can get a lot of new findings out of it. We can learn from it by changing some aspect of the implementation. We can identify major gaps that we did not see before. We can maybe add different types of response. So using such information from our own implementation is much more credible and more relevant to the context, or it can be more reliable than searching for secondary data to base our implementation on, because that's what we're doing actually. We base the implementation based on the needs and sometimes from secondary data. The entire implementation and justification would be much stronger if we recycle these information from M&E and use them in a good way for learning, to identify gaps, to see how we can maybe adapt our response and to learn from it.
Yeah, I think part of what you are saying is around the fact that we need to be interpreting the data more. I think that a lot of the times people think that you just analyze the data, you crunch out a number, you put that number in your donor report and all done. But actually, there's a whole layer of interpretation and validation that we should be doing with monitoring. And that's what we need to focus on, is socializing that understanding that monitoring data has value, and it has its own intrinsic value beyond the evaluation data, beyond research data. And that if we look at it, we interpret it, and then we validate that finding with frontline staff or with the clients, we can really make very impactful change in our programs.
Let's talk a little bit about a success story in that. We're talking about what we should be focusing on when we monitor for quality, but what does that look like in action? Can you give me an example of what happens when monitoring is done well?
I'll give you a very recent example. So, you know, the situation in Lebanon is very challenging right now, and the context has drastically changed. So from the monitoring tools and the analysis that we've done and that we're always doing, especially right now, we noticed that several trends changed and that the needs of the beneficiaries also changed. If we did not do this, and we did not do this analysis maybe, or the interpretation of the findings that we got, we would have maybe still implemented our activities in the same way. And yes, we would have seen a small impact maybe, but this won't be directly responding to the needs of the beneficiaries and using the data in an efficient way. So monitoring allowed us to adapt a lot of activities and a lot of sessions based on these needs, so the change of needs. And we were able to pilot test this adaptation and see that the impact can be greater. So we use the information that we've been collecting to be able to change this specific implementation and make it much better. So what was considered an outcome before, out of what we collected, was used again to make the hypothesis of changing or adapting these activities. But actually, this does not stop here, especially with the case of Lebanon and specifically right now. So continuous monitoring should be done just to make sure that we're always doing the same interpretation, the analysis, to be able to provide a good quality and to be able actually to inform program and to be able to adapt all the activities based on the needs, because that's what we're doing. We should provide all the sessions or activities based on the needs of the beneficiaries.
That's so great, Bon. I love hearing stories of people using data to make the programs more useful for the clients. On the other side of things, we can also learn a lot about the needs of our staff. And so a few years ago, we were piloting a mobile and remote case management program for gender-based violence. And we discovered, so we had the focal points fill out a report every time they engaged with someone. And this was a key aspect of the mobile response, because the focal points were those people living in the communities, part of the communities, and they were the people that survivors were going to when the social workers weren't able to get there. And we discovered from these reports that they were taking that the focal points were going to survivors' homes in the middle of the night, you know, responding to real need, responding to requests from the survivors, but potentially putting themselves and the survivor in danger in certain situations because there might be an act of violence situation. They might be trying to get the survivor out of the home, but the perpetrator could still be there. So on top of the fact that they were going there, they were also becoming so drained and burned out because they felt like they were on call 24/7. In response to this, we were able to give the focal points a lot more training. So one of the things that we focused on in the training was, of course, the fact that going to the home of a survivor is usually dangerous for yourself or for the survivor. And so it's not recommended. And we needed to set up points where the survivors can meet with the focal points in the safe spaces. And then we also talked a lot about self-care and burnout and how we needed to reorganize the program so that it wasn't a 24/7 access to these individuals. And so we were able to make a lot of changes and give a lot of extra support to the focal points because of their very own monitoring data.
I love these stories and hearing both the perspective from how you can look inward at your program and then also look at the people who are doing your programming as well, that you can have a kind of a multi-focus when you're looking at your data, and you can learn different things about different aspects of your program or different aspects that have an effect on the quality of your programming. I'm also struck by how much this kind of follows the scientific method, even if we don't want to apply that kind of structure to this. I mean, there's a lot of observation, you know, research or collecting data. Bon, you mentioned generating a hypothesis and then analyzing that data further and coming to some kind of conclusion or asking a better research question or learning question. I think that's a really key piece of this that makes it so important that we get the right people in the room. And so I want to come back to something that you all have been talking about, which is bringing people outside of those with just the M&E hat into these conversations. Betsy, you mentioned socializing this understanding. So I'm curious, how do we get programmatic folks or leadership or clients involved in interpretation or taking forward learning?
I honestly think that all program staff should be involved in monitoring. So yes, of course, some dedicated M&E staff should be there because they have the expertise and the knowledge about M&E, but also monitoring should not be only restricted to M&E staff. So that's what we actually did recently in Lebanon. So every team member has a section on monitoring in their job description. Of course, this section varies depending on the position and the tasks performed by every team member, but it's a way to keep everyone involved. As for the clients, and I mean beneficiaries or any GBV survivor, I think that we should get back to them with the findings or the interpretation that we did and the analysis that we did. So because we're also accountable to the beneficiaries that we serve. So I think that this also should not only be disseminated with donors, with program staff, but we also should go back to the beneficiaries and just maybe showing them the work that we've been analyzing and we've been doing based on the on their feedback, on the activities that we did with them, on the trends that we're finding. So yeah, that's it.
I completely agree. I think that taking the findings back to the clients or to the people who are providing the data is something that has historically lived in the research world and hasn't really made it into the M&E space. And that's something that I'm excited about potentially doing more of. I know you had Catherine D'Ignazio on the podcast a while back to talk about data feminism. And one of the major tenets of data feminism is to embrace pluralism. And this is something that I think we haven't done well in the history of monitoring and evaluation. And that is actually the future of monitoring and evaluation. We need to be recognizing that the people who lead the programs, the people who attend the programs, are those who have the perspectives that are the most valuable. And so therefore, asking all of them for feedback, involving all of them in the interpretation, analysis, validation process will allow for a more holistic understanding of the data we're collecting. Those ground truths are really, really important. And so I hope that this is something that's going to move forward more, but it definitely is initially potentially more time consuming. And it's a practice that people are not currently familiar with and also not socialized to. So for instance, they're just simply not used to doing it. So it's something that I think leaders need to make space and time for in order to have it become second nature.
Yeah. I love this idea. I think, you know, Betsy, you and I have talked about this before, about how it seems like even if we create more of a learning culture within our programs outside of just M&E, the piece that they're really missing is really bringing in the people that are affected in whatever program you are, having them involved in interpretation, and hopefully moving on to a phase of co-design as you move forward and take your program forward. Along these lines of what we're hoping for in the future, I'm curious to hear from you both. What do you hope is the future of monitoring? What trends in this area are you most excited about, or what do you think we should really be working towards?
Definitely using the data that we collected and maybe analyzing it more, interpreting it, as you both said, just maybe to try to co-design the entire implementation, starting with the design with the beneficiaries until we also collect all the data and get back to them. It's not easy. It's a whole process. It's a change in the entire work that we actually do, but it will benefit a lot the entire implementation and it will enrich this implementation. And I also think that the M&E people should also know about the program that they work for. So for example, for WPE, they should have some experience in, for example, gender roles, just to make sure that they can also contribute in the analysis in a better way. And not only in the analysis, specifically with the recommendations, the learning, what we can do further. I think it's a long way, but that's the ideal thing of, or the ultimate M&E plan. So hopefully someday we will be able to reach it.
Love that point around programs, people understanding M&E, but also M&E understanding the programs they're evaluating. I think there's been this historical perspective that M&E staff have to be completely objective and therefore they shouldn't be involved whatsoever in anything. And it's funny, Christy, that you mentioned the scientific method before, because though I agree that there's definitely, you know, you have your hypothesis and you want to be systematic and all of that, there's also this cultural shift happening, I think, in M&E to believe that there can be rigor while also being more participatory, more engaged across a broad range of people. And that historically would not have been seen as being objective and therefore would not have been okay with the scientific method inventors. But I really am hoping that we are moving in this direction where it's understood that you do need to have this background in gender-based violence or in gender roles to be able to fully interpret the findings. You do need to have some lived experience to be able to validate the data points. And then also the shift away from the idea that collecting the most data is the best way to do monitoring. You know, sometimes it's better to collect less, but have it be of a higher quality and have the time to really delve in and analyze, interpret, and validate. I'm looking forward to a future where we don't have files and files and files of data that goes unanalyzed. Vaughn, I'd be curious what you think the biggest barrier is to monitoring for quality. I know I have the assumption that it's time, but I wanted to check that assumption with you.
Exactly. That's the main problem. It's also, we don't get the chance even to conduct some big learning events or any evaluation that we actually look for because we don't have time, because we have other commitments and other donor requirements. And sometimes we don't have the proper budget for it. It's time and budget as well, because also donors, they tend to cut from the monitoring and evaluation budget, and specifically when it gets to a learning and evaluation. So these two are maybe the most important barriers.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that funding point. I feel like it's money is the first thing to be cut when there's a little bit of a budget shortage. What do you think that donors could do to be encouraging better monitoring and evaluation?
I think that maybe some interpretation, some quality assurance should be included in the reporting. So to get to know more about the data that we collected. So what we did with everything that was actually collected through monitoring. Data is not only, as we said, it's not only these quantitative numbers, and M&E is not only quantitative number. It's very easy to reach people. And we actually learned from all the adaptations that we've done, specifically during COVID-19, that reaching people through this remote implementation is easy. But the essential thing is that people are really benefiting from the sessions or the activities that we're providing. So I think that they should have a section just to elaborate more on the findings, on how we used these findings to improve maybe the entire programmatic aspect. And they maybe also should have a section on suggesting some ways or some changes for the entire program. And one more thing is that what can also be done is to focus more on outcome indicators rather than output indicators. So under the outcome and indicators, we get to develop more what we actually have. And part of it is, of course, still quantitative, but we have also a lot of qualitative data that can also be analyzed under these outcome indicators. But for the output indicators, they're very straightforward, just numbers. And so they cannot actually represent the entire data collection that we're actually doing. So maybe moving more towards outcome indicators, of course, not any outcome indicators, but outcome indicators that really show the quality of the work. They can show the analysis that we've been doing, all the interpretation that we can do. So I think it's one of the things that can also be enforced by donors to make sure that maybe they can foster monitoring for quality.
Yeah, you said two things in there that really stuck out to me. The reporting where they could make the request that you explain how you've used the data. I think that's really interesting. And then talking about the outcome indicators, I often think about there being, you know, the overarching outcome or even impact indicators for your clients directly. But then I think of these intermediate outcome indicators around the quality of your implementation and, you know, staff quality. And donors don't really ask for those very often. You know, the percent of staff who have a certain score on the pre-post test, or, you know, a certain percent of staff who have certain gender equitable attitudes, you know, or observation of facilitation, these sorts of indicators that we are suggesting and we would like to use, but the donors usually act like they aren't interested. So I wonder what it would be like if they were more interested in that. And then I think to take it one step further, one thing that I was reflecting on, Christy, is I felt like we had such a wonderful experience with ELRA because they wanted to not only hear the learning, but they wanted to discuss it with us. And I recognize that donors have a lot of grants and they have a lot of things going on. But I think that if we want to make M&E better, if we want to make our program implementation of a higher quality, having that fostered discussion, the facilitated discussion with donors and the learning would be really interesting. And I'd love to see some of the smaller donors who have the time for that doing more of it.
I would love to see that too. I think that's the donor that came to mind as you were both chatting, that there's a real focus on genuine learning. It sounds very simple, but I think they have at ELRA a real focus on that and an interest in it. And it also allowed us to be able to kind of pivot our programming in the midst of it a bit based off what we were learning. And I also think that's quite a rare thing to be able to do in this world. So I would love to have more of the spaces to have informal or more casual discussions of learning. So it's not like I have to come with a pre-prepared presentation and it's very formal and we don't really have that culture where I can share something and we can build off of each other and iterate what the ways forward might be. I think it's quite rare, but I would love to see more of that myself as well.
I think that flexibility piece you mentioned is really important too. And we haven't really talked about that yet, but the ability to actually use the data to make change and to pivot, I think some donors are not as open to that level of flexibility to really follow the need. And other donors are becoming more flexible than I've seen them be in the past. So I'd like to see more of that in the future as well.
I think as our monitoring tools and processes advance, I'm hoping that it will enable this environment where we can really have more of a flexible learning process. And that's really what monitoring should be about, you know, learning that we can take forward and put to use. I hope that this episode inspires more of us to create a broad culture of learning that goes beyond sharing outputs and towards advancing this work. So a big thanks to Bon and Betsy for sharing your ideas in response to this question, and also to the listener who requested us covering this topic. So keep those suggestions coming, and thank you both for joining.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Safety, voice, respect. Join the WPE movement.